today we're going to learn the last page of Kinim, Kinim Kafe, and we're going to start the first page of Masechet Tamid. So Kinim Kafe starts at the top. We learned yesterday about the two different opinions about whether you have to bring, if you remember, there was this woman who promised that she was going to bring with her pair of birds that she was obligated to bring another pair of korbanot olah. And if she had a boy, exactly. And there were all sorts of scenarios where the Kohen did it wrong and then she'd have to bring an extra one, and then where there were all sorts of situations where we got up to the extent that she could potentially have to bring seven instead of her four. She had to bring an additional, her original four plus another seven, and according to Ben Azai, potentially eight. Okay, so in reaction to this, and we'll end with kind of a gadata, and I want to just state that, or I don't know exactly gadata, but kind of some other, you know, not exactly halachic stuff. If you remember, when we started Masechet Kinim, I said that the order of the Mishnayot, the order of the Masechtot, is different in the Mishnah than it is in the Gemara. And in the Mishnah, this was the last Mishnah of Seder Kodshim. Mm. So one can understand it much more in the context of that. This would be the nice way to end Masechet Kodshim. Amar Rabbi Yoshua Zehu Shamru Keshu Chai Kolo Echad Keshu Met Kolo Shiv'ah. Okay, they're talking about a sheep when it's alive. It's got one sound, or a ram, or it could be sheep or a ram. When it's alive, it has one sound, you know, screams, right? It makes one voice. But when it dies, seven. Ketzad, kolo shiva. How do you get the seven voices? Shnei karnav l'shtei chatzotzrot. Okay, right? You could take the horns and make two trumpets out of them. Shtei shokav l'shnei chalilim. It's two thighs, right thighs? Yeah, the thighs could be used as
thigh bones,
right? Obviously, the bones could be used as chalilim, as flutes. Oro, its skin, litof, as a drum. Me'av, the small intestines, linivalim. Me'av is the large, sorry. As for nevel, which is a lyre, it's not exactly clear what exactly a nevel is. All different debates about it, but the assumption is there were these stringy parts that could be used for the nevalim, and b'nei me'av l'kinorot. And therefore, the strings of the kinor, of the... I'll translate harp. As a violin, right? The harp. Right, because a nevel, usually we think of a nevel as a harp. Some people say nevel is nowadays, it's the harp that we use nowadays. It's unclear what exactly the difference is. They were both string instruments, although some people even say that nevel maybe was a blow instrument, I think I saw. Debate about exactly what this is. So they would use those for different parts. The yeshomrim af tzimro lasot tchelet. Now this is weird. Tchelet is not exactly it's a color, right? It's a type of a dye, a wool dye. What they are talking about, the way the Mefreshim explained, is that it means for the Kohen Gadol on his coat, if you remember, the Me'il had these palmonim at the bottom, and there was tchelet used there. So they would use from the sheep the tchelet, right, the wool, they would dye it as tchelet and use it on the Kohen Gadol's Me'il, which would then make it eight. Why did he want eight? Because then it matched the eight chataot, according to Ben Azai. Okay? So basically, you see, out of one thing grows many, right? This one woman who promised something, and it grew to, you know, she created this whole obligation. By the way, you wonder if maybe they were trying to discourage women from making nidarim, right? Because look what you could get yourself into. In light of this statement comes the big end of Seder Kodeshim, and we'll end with this. Rabbi Shimon Akashi Omer, Siknei Ma'aretz Kozman Shehem Azkinim Da'atam Mitrefet Alehen. The older older people get, usually their minds don't work as well. Shenamar mesir safa l'nemanim v'tam zkinim yikach. Right, the guys can basically take away, you know, the knowledge of this kinim. It's pasuk in Iyov. Aval zikne Torah inan ken, but those who learn Torah are not so. Ela kozman shem azkinim da'atam mityashevet alehen shenamar b'yishishim chokma v'orach yamim tfuna. Okay, that there's old chokhmah in older people, that the older you get, the more wise you become. Hadradach b'medvarim v'slik alat mesechet kanim. And, right, nice if it would be true. Well, there's, you know, it does, something people do say, okay, so first of all, one connection could be just to Masechet Kinim in general. If you can follow Masechet Kinim and all the ins and outs, you know, that's a huge intellectual exercise. It was quite complicated, and, you know, maybe it's connected to that. Also, all of Kodshim was quite complicated, a whole new world, something we don't really understand so much. Gemara in general is complicated, and a befitting way, you know, you could also just view it, whether it's true or not true, it was the rabbi's way, if you remember, we've talked about this many times, it was that was the way they spoke to encourage people. They basically say, oh, you'll live longer if you do this, right? It's the flip of, mm-hmm. The difficult source we always struggle with, which is, al shalosh avorot nashim meitot b'shat leidatan, right? It's that trying to connect, right, reward and, good things in this world to doing good deeds and bad things to doing, wrong things, and trying to kind of make Seder in the world, whether it's true or not. I don't think the rabbis necessarily thought all these things were true. They were just trying to give people something to grasp onto, hope or kind of a push to do the right thing. That was the way they viewed it. Okay, we're not going to do it. We'll do a Siyum when we get to the end of the Seder. We're going to start right now with Masechet Tamid. It's a little bit weird because we're kind of in two Masechetot on one page. This is a weird pagination thing. So now we're on Tamid, Daf, Kafhei, Amud Bet. Before we start Masechet Tamid, I'll give a little bit of intro. Masechet Tamid is all about the Avodah and the Beit HaMikdash, what they did on a daily basis. And it's less of a halachic mishnah. First of all, there's Gemara on a few prakim and not other prakim, which is a little strange, right? To Kinim, at least it was none at all. This has some and some. Some prakim have, some prakim don't. It's a little bit different in style, and the style of the Mishnah matches the Mishnah, if you remember, in Yoma, and a few other Mishnah that we saw were like this. It's a description of what happened, rather than kind of saying, this is the halacha. It's sort of describing what went on in the Beit HaMikdash. B'shlosha mekamot ha-kohanim shomrim b'Beit HaMikdash. There were three places from which the kohanim did Shmira. Okay, first of all, what Shmira are we talking about? Where do we get the Kohanim we're supposed to do Shmira? So it talks about in Sefer Bamidbar that the Kohanim, their job is Lishmoret Mishmeret HaKodesh. Okay, so they're supposed to watch the Kodesh. So basically, we're going to learn that they did it in three places. Okay, Beit Avtinas, Beit HaNitzotz, Beit HaMoked. I recommend, try to get a map, look at something online. There's a lot of maps of the Beit HaMikdash. It will definitely help with this, the second, and especially Midot, when we talk about Mamash, the Midot of the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to need maps. So if you can get yourself one, even better. Otherwise, definitely online there exists maps. So there's three places where they did Shmira. Beit Avtinas, Beit HaNitzotz, and Beit HaMoked. These are three places, all in the Azara. Okay, if you remember, there's the Har HaBayit. That's a much bigger space. Within the Har HaBayit, there's the Ezrat Nashim and the Ezrat Kohanim, and in between there's a small Ezrat Yisrael. Doesn't mean all the Yisrael can only go there, right? The Ezrat Nashim wasn't like we have in a Beit Knesset in Ezrat Nashim specifically for women, although many times men do sit in the Ezrat Nashim when women aren't there. But in those days, the Ezrat Nashim just meant this is the only place women can go. They can't go beyond this. But everyone was allowed in the Ezrat Nashim, and the Ezrat Yisrael were only the males. And in Ezrat Kohanim already, only Kohanim, Israelim couldn't go beyond there. So now, what's this Shmira for? Okay, so the Shmira is going to be, let's talk about where these places are. The Beit HaNitzotz is on the north side. On my map, that's at the bottom, even though normally north is north and south is south. But here, the north side is put at the bottom of the map. That's because, I don't know why they don't map that. Some of the maps have it the other way. But anyway, the Shar HaNitzotz, the Beit HaNitzotz is by the Shar HaNitzotz. Okay, there's all these Sharim that led into the Azara from all different places. So we're going to see that the Beit HaNitzotz is by one Shar. The Beit HaMoked is next to that one. Okay, both on the north side. The Lishkat Beit Avtinas is by the Shar HaMayim on the south side. There's actually, it's always a problem when you have a map because the map shows things in one place. There's a lot of machlokot about these things. It's not clear where Beit Avtinas was. Was it on the north side or the south side? Beit Avtinas, if you remember, they were the ones who did the Ktoret. They prepared the Ktoret. So basically, those are the three places where the Kohanim did it. Whether they actually appear exactly where they are on this map or not is a debate, but at least it gives you some sort of visual. So they would be watching in these three places. Beit Avtinas or Beit HaNitzotz Hayu Aliyot. You can see, okay, I don't know if you noticed these little yellow and black lines next to a bunch of these places. That shows there were steps going up. There's supposed to be steps. It's just flat here because it's a picture. But you see there's those black and yellow lines from like where it says Shar HaMayim, let's say. There's these, so those are the steps leading up to the Lishkape, to where they went in Beit Avtinas on the up on top. So those two had aliyot. Harovim shomrim sham. Okay, who did the shmira? Young children. Okay, we're going to distinguish them later from the perchei kuna, which also sound like children of Kohanim. But Robim are young children. We've seen like Riba. Once we saw like a young maiden woman was called a Riba. It's a term for a young child. They would do the Shmirah. There's a debate about, okay, first of all, this question, what was the Shmirah for? Theoretically, okay, and when, forget it, before we even get to what the Shmirah was for, when did they do the Shmirah? Did they do it only at night? Or did they do it also during the day? Some people say it was day and night. They always watch. Some people say they only did it at night, and that's why they had the young children do it, because the older people, the Kohanim, remember, it was the Kohanim that were on the Mishmar that week. It was their job. They were on call that week. They would have to sleep at night, because if they didn't sleep at night, how were they going to do the Avodah the next day? They had to work. It was a work week for them. So the kids didn't have to work because they were young. So they stayed, right, yes. I mean, it seems strange to keep little kids up all night long. It's a little bit weird. But by the way, this whole thing reminds me, okay, when I was kids in the Army, this whole thing reminds me of the Army, okay, because there's the Shmirot, and then there's backup, and there's this support, and we'll see. But that was what came to my mind in reading this. So these kids would do the Shmirah. The adults would sleep. Okay, now where would they sleep? Well, they were on duty. Now, I forgot to mention. So what are they doing? What are they watching from? First of all, they locked the door. Okay, if you see Shaar Nikanor, that's right before the Ezra Israel. Those gates were locked at night. No one could get in the Beit HaMikdash at night. So it's not like they were watching out for theft. They weren't watching out for what else, theoretically? A czar coming in, someone who's not allowed to come in. So they claim that what they were really doing, it's just a matter of kavod. Like a king, you go to a palace, there's always guards out of respect. Right? They're not necessarily what you think about the changing of the guards. Those guards aren't really doing anything. They're just, I mean, they're sort of, but they're for show. So it was a way of showing, this is a holy place, we need guards. And that might also explain why there's three. Theoretically, one guard would be enough if you really needed to guard, but it's out of respect. They have more than one. We're going to learn that the Levi'im, there were 21. Levi'im, maybe even 24, that also were guarding. So we had a lot of guards here. Our Mishnah says three. Okay, so three for the Kohanim. Bet Avtinas, Bet Anitzos, Bet Amokeg. Then we said Bet Anitzos and Bet Avtinas were Aliyot. The Rovim were guarding there. Beit HaMoked Kippah. Okay, some people say it had, if you can look, there's a circle there. The ceiling was like a big kippah, a rounded ceiling. Some people say it wasn't an aliyah, but there was a kippah, and on that was the Beit HaMoked. By the way, why would it be high? Obviously, because if you're guarding, you always guard in a high spot. I mean, you don't always, but it's often a good idea to do that.
Now, there was another reason you weren't allowed to sit in the Beit HaMikdash, so if you were elevated,
so we're going to get to that.
Oh, really? I thought it was in the comments.
Ah, interesting. Because something comes up on Kav Zion, comes up about the issue of them sitting. I'm trying to remember, though. Was it because of Ein Yeshiva Bazara, right? So it says here. That's why that explains something else. There was something else that was explained about the sitting thing. That's why they're, because we're going to talk about the Levi'im, they guarded outside the Azara. They went into the corners, and they went in the corner outside the Azara because they wanted to allow them to sit. If they wanted to sit on the job, they would be able to sit. So they had them outside the Azara doing it.
And so they said for the same reason, but, like in Beit Avtinas, when they were busy preparing the Torah, that they were allowed to sit if they were on an elevation and not on the
Oh, really? That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, fair. Okay, I didn't read that. Good. Thanks for adding that. Okay, so now, the Ziknei Beit Av Yeshenim Sham. So now, there was the Beit HaMoked. Not only was it used for guarding, but that's where they don't only mean the elderly, but all the grown-ups would sleep there. Okay? We were on the Mishmar. Notice that the Beit HaMoked is half in the Chol and half in the Kodesh. You see this, those black dots in the middle on this map? So there's part of it, this whole part of it that's Kodesh. You can see these, see all those squares? Okay, that's going to be what we're going to talk about right now. There were Rovadim Shel Evan. There were these rows of stones. Okay, they explain that the stones were wider at the bottom, then narrower, 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 narrower. It was kind of like bunk beds built into the wall. And they would sleep on those bunk beds built into the wall. Now, some people say, actually, no, the stone, and then they made them so that you could climb from one to the other. That's why it was kind of like steps where it got narrower. Some people say, no, that was just the steps. And they would actually sleep in these areas that were in the wall. They kind of built into the wall beds. And then they would use the stones to get up to their spot. And they would sleep in some sort of thing like that. We'll see it later why they wouldn't sleep in beds. Umaftechot azara biyadam. Okay, they had the keys of the azara in their hands. most people say it wasn't literally in their hands, they didn't sleep with them in their hands. It meant they were responsible for the keys. Pirchei Keuna ish kisto ba'aretz. Now the younger ones among them, we're going to have to see what's the difference between these and the Reuvim. They would sleep with their clothes, like, you know, with a little blanket on the ground. Okay, I was thinking sleeping bags, right? And they didn't sleep in these bed areas. They slept, or these, you know, whatever they were, these stones, they slept on their, you know, on like a, you know, some sort of cloth on the ground. Lo hayu yishenim be big day kodesh. They didn't sleep in their big day kuna. This is why I also thought of the army, right? You don't sleep in your madim, right? That's what, it's all about the army. It's all about the clothes and what you're wearing, and you have certain things you're supposed to wear at certain times. So they didn't sleep in their clothes at night. Ela hayu poshtin. They would take them off. U'minichim otam tachat rashehem. And there's going to be a whole debate later on about how they could go under their heads. Like a pillow? What do you mean? You're using big day kuna as a pillow? So they're going to explain later. It was next to their heads, not on under their heads. Okay, couldn't possibly have meant that. Umit kasim b'ksur asman, and they would wear their own clothing at night, right? Kind of like the army, right? They don't sleep in madim. Sometimes you do when you're on kumanu, but otherwise, right, you sleep in your clothes and, right, maybe pajamas. I don't know if pajamas existed then, but okay, tov. That's it for today's stuff.